This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, February 8th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on this edition of the program, music from members of the Bentonville Orchestra, recorded in the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and a preview of what could be one of the largest single concert events in Fort Smith history. More than 300 people on stage at once, singing together. First this morning, though, Sheffield Nelson, attorney, former natural gas company executive, and former GOP nominee for Arkansas governor, wants the severance tax on natural gas in Arkansas raised. Yesterday, he filed paperwork with the Arkansas Attorney General's office to lead and initiate an act to raise the severance tax to a flat 7%. Currently, severance tax rates on natural gas in Arkansas range from 1.25% to 5%. The act will need more than 62,000 valid signatures and the go-ahead from the Attorney General's office to be on the ballot in 2012. Under the proposal, 5% of tax collected would go to state general revenues, 95% would be directed as special revenues directed toward state highways, county roads, and city roads. Yesterday, Roby Brock from TalkBusiness.net talked to Sheffield Nelson about this proposal.
Mr. Nelson, tell me a little bit about what you are proposing to do, what you laid out today.
I'm proposing to get the severance tax raised to 7%, which is exactly what I proposed back in 2008. It would differ from what's in there now in that they arrived at a 5% maximum back in 2008 that the legislature passed, but it had so many exclusions and things that would be deducted from it that it amounts to about a 4.4% maximum, but by the time you blended everything in, including varieties of gas and all this, it probably produced 1.3-1.4%.
What do you think this would produce if you were to get this passed at 7% with no loopholes? What would the difference between what we're getting now and what we would be getting?
Well, the difference would be on the last 12 months running, the severance taxes produced about $54 to $55 million. This would produce $250 million, so it's a dramatic difference. And again, remember, their income has gone up because volumes have increased so much. Yet we don't get the benefit of it because we're at such a low rate. You know, in fairness to the governor, though, what we got back at that time was what he could get, and it was a major step because it was the first step toward increasing severance tax.
You're a former natural gas company executive. You also are a former politician who has preached lower taxes and less taxes. Seems kind of odd that you would be the guy leading the charge to raise the severance tax that would particularly affect natural gas companies in Arkansas.
Well, it would on the surface, but if you look behind that, I'm also a businessman who believes in doing what's right from a business standpoint, and that's a cost of business. These people should pay us a fair amount for removing the gas from the ground here in Arkansas. Now, I would remind you that even when I was president of ArcLaw, I was the one that helped lead a charge to try to get an increase then, and we actually got it through the Senate and then got defeated in the House. But I've been for this for many, many years.
All right. Anything else you want to say in terms of why you're doing this and what you maybe speak to the fact that this is a marathon and not a sprint like it was last time?
The last time we were so late getting in, we had very few months to organize and to raise the money and to do what we had had to do. The governor came up with a viable solution at the time, and I think that was smart for everybody. It was good to take that. This time it will be a marathon. We don't have the election until 21 months from today. We've got plenty of time to build grassroots support for this. I plan to build a coalition, and I plan to have people out in the state working in every county, and we will have a major campaign.
Roby Brock talked with Sheffield Nelson yesterday after Nelson announced he was leading an effort to bring a ballot initiative to raise the severance tax on natural gas in Arkansas to the 2012 November ballot. There's more from the story at TalkBusiness.net. Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communication store or online at VZW.com/small business. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. And with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, making the drive over from Fort Smith, is Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell, Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts.
Well, good afternoon.
And how are you?
I am great. How are you today?
Very good. When last we talked, I came your way to Fort Smith.
That's correct.
And the youth orchestra had just kind of...
We were just about ready to start auditioning kids, and we're auditioning students right now, right and left. I think by the time we finish auditions, we'll have auditioned 80 students for this orchestra. So it's obviously a great fit for the area. You know, we're auditioning students from Fayetteville, from Northwest Arkansas, down to Ozark, Clarksville, all the way over to Poto, the entire region. And so I think it's just going to be a great fit for our community. And I'm really excited about it.
You're going from zero to 60 pretty fast, aren't you?
That's right. We are. And it's full orchestra. I have been surprised at the number of students in winds, brass, percussion in those particular areas that are auditioning, and then, of course, full string section. So I'm just excited. We start up rehearsals on February 12th. And, of course, at this point, students can still call us, 788-7251. You know, or they can email the Academy, look on our website, and schedule an audition time. So it's not too late. They can jump in.
And have you had participation across the musical field? I mean, you've got enough woodwinds, you've got enough brass, you've got enough strings.
We do. I'll tell you, the only instrument we're missing currently is an oboe. So we need a great oboist. That's a difficult instrument. And so young students, you know, there are not that many young students playing oboe. So for all those oboists out there, we need an oboe.
In conjunction with this new youth orchestra is a big event coming up in March.
Major. I would say this event is potentially one of the largest musical concert events ever to reach Fort Smith. You know, as you know, we've talked about before, the Academy of the Arts serves students from across the area, both tuition-paid students and some underserved, underreached students. And so we like to provide scholarships for some of those underserved kids. And our money is provided by either private funding or the tuition that parents pay. We do not operate out of the general budget from the university, so we take in tuition. Of course, we have some wonderful private donors, but that allows for us to do these fundraising events. So we have come up with this event that we are just so excited about. So many people are involved in it, and it is called Gospel Fest 2011, and it's the first ever for the Academy of the Arts, and really, as I said, it's probably one of the single largest events that Fort Smith and the surrounding area has ever seen. And what we're doing with this event is we are bringing in area church choirs and area choirs, I should just say, people who love to sing, some 14 churches, and most of the members of the choir from those areas are from those churches are participating, along with 14 soloists. So we're looking at potentially 300 to 400 voices on stage with the soloists and a 25-piece band, all coming together for an evening. You know, maybe 400 people on stage, counting our academy choirs. They're participating as well, and the area choirs that are participating, we've invited children to participate from grades 3 and up. So we're hoping for 100 young people to be singing in this concert. And we're coming together for an evening to present a concert of gospel music, whether it be Southern gospel, Black gospel, traditional favorite hymns.
Bluegrass? Not so much?
Maybe more Southern
gospel.
Okay. Gaither style.
Gotcha.
And some true Black gospel. We have Tanya Nokokaley coming, who many people know her as Tanya Jackson. And if you've ever seen her perform with the Don Bailey Band, I mean, she's just a phenomenal Black gospel singer. The St. James Black Gospel Choir that does a lot of concerts with area groups, they are performing with us. And so that Black gospel style of music is really well covered, along with the Southern gospel, the Gaither style, Pam Camp.
The harmony sort
the
of.
The harmonies,
right.
Yeah. We have some men's quartets singing, some ladies' trios, and then these soloists. All of them are soloing. I'm doing traditional music. I have music that's arranged for full orchestra, full choir. I have just a fantastic arrangement of Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee that just screaming high vocals that, you know, just a great concert piece. And, of course, you know, we know that's a Beethoven piece originally, and to add the vocals to it is just a great piece. So we've got some wonderful music and about a 90-minute concert. We're doing a pre-concert at 6:45. The soloists will come on stage at 6:45 and perform some pre-concert music together. And then we'll present the 90-minute concert, and we're just really excited about it.
You look at the list, and there are... Well, what, a dozen or more churches?
About 14 churches participating.
Okay.
That, you know, wanted to do this, just wanted to do it.
So will there ever be a point where every voice is singing in unison?
Yes, and that's the neat part. You know, if you've ever heard anywhere from a 300 to 600 voice choir.
The Tabernacle Choir, Mormon Tabernacle Choir comes to mind.
That's right. It's a phenomenal sound. And so this event, and this is one of the reasons I say it's one of the single largest events, it's not an event where each one of these groups comes together and one group sings one song and then the next group sings another song. Every one of these groups right now is practicing all of the music.
So it's not like a variety show.
No.
This is a single ensemble.
Exactly. Exactly. So all of these voices are coming together, and, you know, whatever piece we're doing, from something like a black gospel piece called Mountain Mover to a traditional piece like Revive Us Again, they're all singing together. And they're doing some of the pieces when the soloists step to the microphone. Sometimes the choir will be backing the vocalists collectively. So these vocalists are picking things that a 300-voice choir can sing with them. I should say the event, we have not talked about that. The
right.
event is Saturday evening, March 5th. And, of course, where do you put that many people?
In a big place,
yes. We're hoping to sell 2,500 tickets, and we believe that we will. And so we're encouraging people to get tickets sooner than later. But we are coming together at Harvest Time Tabernacle, which is, if you've been in that particular venue, it's a huge venue, huge staging. So we're all rehearsing there on Friday night, February 18th. Then we do another dress rehearsal on Friday night, February 4th. And then we present the concert on Saturday night, February 5th. And
no, March 5th.
I mean, I'm sorry,
yes,
March 5th.
Yes.
Did I say February? February 18th, March 4th. And March 5th.
Gotcha.
Yeah, March 4th will be the dress rehearsal, and the band should be on stage, and the choir will be on stage. We're staying on stage together the entire time, because you can imagine you don't want 300 or 400 people filing on and off stage.
That would,
that be would the
take
whole
the whole
night.
Show.
Exactly. And so all of us will be on stage together. We will put the children down in probably the front row, and we'll just bring them to the stage. And then the rest of us will be on stage together for the evening. And we can seat about 2,500 people, and we have tickets out there everywhere.
March 5th at Harvest Time Tabernacle in Fort Smith.
Yes.
People want more information about that, about the Academy, or about the youth orchestra, they can go
to www.uafortsmith.edu/academy, or they can call 479-788-7251.
Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell is the Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Academy of the Arts. Thanks for your time, as always.
Oh, thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Another winter storm system is approaching Arkansas. Meteorologists predict up to a foot of new snow in parts of the state by the end of the storm. Meteorologist Matthew Clay says the precipitation is expected to begin this evening in northwest Arkansas, then move its way through the rest of the state tomorrow and Thursday.
We're not expecting any kind of freezing precip associated with this storm like we've seen in the past, because we've had a cold front come through which has brought the temperatures down below freezing. And since temperatures are staying below freezing, the atmosphere is cooled off and everything that will fall on Tuesday through Thursday will just be snow.
The snow may be a big inconvenience for most people, but this next round could tap out what's budgeted by the state for treating roads with sand and salt. Glenn Bollock is a spokesperson for the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department.
It's not cheap. And we're on a fiscal year, so winter is winter. But, in a typical year, we average about $5 million during the winter season for the materials and everything that goes into fighting those conditions. We've already around that $5 million mark already this year. We'll certainly top that this week.
The added cost ends up coming out of the maintenance, meaning that projects that had been planned might be pushed back another year. But Bollock says safety issues like potholes or guardrails are always taken care of. Last year, the state spent $11 million treating roadways during winter weather. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Wayne Bell. He's behind the Culture Club that can be found at FayettevilleFlyer.com. It concentrates on culture and pop culture. Wayne, welcome back.
Ah, thank you, Kyle.
You have been traveling, so you can see movies that will be mentioned at the Oscar broadcast that have not made it here yet.
Yeah, but I think that all three of the films we're going to talk about today are coming to Northwest Arkansas before the Academy Awards. So although I saw them in Tulsa, they should be here soon.
The movies are 127 Hours,
uh-huh.
Rabbit Hole, and Blue
Valentine. Valentine, yeah.
In which there's a lost arm, a lost child, and a lost relationship. These are three somber movies.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting way to look at it. They all three feature an Oscar-nominated performance this year. James Franco for 127 Hours, Nicole Kidman for Rabbit Hole, and Michelle Williams for Blue Valentine. And they are all three sort of downer, depressing, you know, seen as depressing movies, but I left each one of them with a different feeling. So maybe when we actually look at them, you know, we can go into that. But I felt like, especially with 127 Hours, there's an inspirational quality.
Well, let me ask you about that movie, because I hesitate to go see it because it's a true story, and it's based on a hiker who was pinned and ultimately has to survive. I don't think I'm giving too much away. I think most people know this. Mm-hmm. He has to cut off his arm.
He has to amputate his own arm with a multi-use pocket tool thing.
And so I am worried about going to this movie and sitting there for 2 hours thinking, okay, this thing is going to happen. And I don't know if I could see
it. Yeah, you know, I had the same feeling. I had no desire to see it. A, because of the subject matter, and B, because it's a Danny Boyle film, who I like Danny Boyle, but I wasn't a huge fan of Slumdog Millionaire, even though it, you know, swept the Oscars a few years ago. But 127 Hours is surprising. Yes, it's the true story of Aaron Ralston, who wrote the book Between a Rock and a Hard Place, about hiking and, you know, this tragic incident that happened, which actually happens in the first 10 minutes of the movie, which is a crater falls on his arm and locks him between a rock and a hard place, as his book says. And then you're pretty much stuck with an hour and 40 minutes of him in this situation. And it's a really interesting movie because, A, it moves really fast, which you would think it's just James Franco and this crater for 2 hours, but it moves very fast. It has a lot of flashbacks, so it's entertaining. It is a little indulgent, just as Danny Boyle films often are, where there's a lot of stuff going on the screen at the same time. But at the end, it's a really inspirational film because it's about the choices that we make to get through a really horrible situation. I mean, this gentleman, anyone who's familiar with the story, had no other choice. He was either going to die because he was running out of water and had little food, or he was going to have to make this decision. The crater wasn't moving, so he had to make this decision. And yes, the last 20 minutes of the movie contain that scene of the amputation, which is about 3 minutes, which from what I've read, the real situation took about 45 minutes. So they've done as much trimming as they can. And it is difficult to watch. I wouldn't, you know, I turn away. I would encourage anyone to turn away during that 3 minutes. Yeah. But for the most part, the movie leaves you with a really inspirational feeling because you're seeing, you know, what other choice did he have? And would you make that choice in that situation? So I left it really positive. I was surprised. I thought it was really well done. It has 6 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and James Franco. It's not going to win any, probably, but it's a really lovely film to see, and I actually think it's better than Slumdog.
Now, Rabbit Hole, which is about a couple after they've lost a child.
Yeah, Rabbit Hole is David Lindsay Aubert's play from about 3 years ago. It won a Tony for its star, Cynthia Nixon, and it won the Pulitzer Prize for drama. It's the story of a couple that is trying to deal with the grief of losing a child. The child, and this isn't giving anything away, in the first 5 minutes you find out that the child was killed in a car accident. I think he was out in the street playing or something, and a teen driver hit him. And it's the story of how everybody deals with grief separately. So it stars former Oscar winner Nicole Kidman. She's nominated again this year. She's brilliant. This movie really reminds us of how great she is. She stars as the mother, Becca, who is really trying to move on. She thinks she should donate his clothes to Goodwill. She thinks she should paint his room. She's really trying to move on. Her husband is played by Aaron Eckhart of Thank You for Not Smoking and Batman, Dark Knight fame. And he's trying to hold on to what's going on. He doesn't want to let go. And then her mother is the third primary member of the cast, played by two-time Oscar winner Diane Wiest. And she's really trying to wallow in egocentric self-pity. So it's really about different approaches to dealing with grief. It's somewhat similar, I felt, to In the Bedroom, the movie a couple of years ago.
When an adult child was dying.
It's a similar exploration of dealing with grief, though In the Bedroom took that interesting twist at the end. But I felt that the film was really beautiful. And the thing that I thought really balanced it well was the fact that it has quite a bit of comedy in it, which is surprising. There's some really touching, lighthearted moments, and I really liked it. I responded really well to it. I wish more people would have seen it. I guess the subject matter is turning people off, but it really should have been in the top 10 of the year.
Then there's Blue Valentine, which is about a relationship that's crumbling.
It's the kind of movie that my partner and I were watching, and when we finished, he said, "Well, that was depressing." I mean, there is no uplifting quality to this one. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be seen. It's a beautiful character study. Blue Valentine got some press earlier this year because it had an NC-17 rating. That got overturned. I'm not really sure why it had an NC-17
rating. It's an R now, right?
Yeah, it's an R. It's not showing much more than anything else, but it's the story of a young couple, former Oscar nominee Ryan Gosling and current nominee for Best Actress Michelle Williams. You might remember her a couple of years ago. She was nominated for Brokeback Mountain. It details the meeting of the two of them early in the relationship, and then it cuts in 4 years later in their relationship after they've had a child, and really the things that they used to really love about each other early in the relationship are the things that are tearing them apart later, like his instability or her frigidness, the things that they used to really enjoy about each other, her structure and his insecurities, now are things that are really difficult and they're tearing them apart. And it's very interesting to see the movie because I think you'll recognize, if you've ever been in a relationship like that, the pattern. It's also a little eerie to watch it because some of the things that are happening in the movie that lead to the difficult place they're in. He has addiction issues and he's unstable. It's a little weird watching Michelle Williams live through that, because anyone who's familiar with her personal narrative knows that that's something she went through with her former husband, Heath Ledger, and they have a young daughter. Well, they have a young daughter in the film. So it's a little uncomfortable to watch, but it's not going to leave you with a feel-good feeling, but it is a beautiful character study of how a marriage can dissolve, and yet these two characters still, they care for each other, but it just can't work.
Wayne, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club at FayettevilleFlyer.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
I know you're leaving. It's too long overdue.
Musician Tom Rush was born on this date in 1941 in New Hampshire. Rush came up in the Boston-Cambridge folk scene of the early 60s, playing folk blues on a series of albums for Prestige Records. He then moved to Elektra, and by the late 60s was interpreting the work of such upcoming writers as Joni Mitchell and James Taylor. By the early 1970s, he was mixing his own songs on albums for Columbia. In recent years, Rush has become something of a folk packager, putting together road shows that include some of the newer folk performers. On February 24, 2009, Rush released What I Know, his first studio album in more than 30 years. His previous album, Trolling for Owls, was released in 2003 and contained stories and songs from live performances.
Say goodbye. Hours that were yours echo like empty rooms. The thoughts we used to share I now keep alone. I woke last night and spoke to you, not thinking you.
On this date in 1934, Art Porter Sr. was born in Little Rock to Eugene Porter Sr., a stonemason, and Lily Mae Porter, who gave Porter his first music lessons. He played in church at the age of 8 and gave his first recital at 12. By 14, he conducted a half-hour classical music radio program from KLRA-AM in Little Rock. Porter became a popular and respected musician of jazz, classical, and spiritual music, and entertained several heads of state. He also performed at two of Bill Clinton's inaugurations as governor and one of his presidential inaugurations. Porter's musical legacy was passed on to Art Porter Jr., whose career, expressed in four albums, ended with his accidental death on November 23, 1996. On this date in 1978, Senate deliberations were broadcast on radio for the first time as members opened debate on the Panama Canal treaties. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's the 8th day of February 2011. It's a Tuesday. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Beckett-Martin. She is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. Hello, Becca.
Hi, Kyle. We're about to have a Becca Beckett-Martin sighting.
Oh, where is this?
I can tell you exactly where I will be tonight.
And that is?
I will be at the Walton Arts Center.
Oh, Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia opens tonight. And as I said the other day, I was never really interested in seeing this show. I like the music of ABBA. I just never was really interested in the show until I talked to the actress who is playing Donna Sheridan. Her name is Kay Tuckerman, and she's fascinating. She was a body double in The Matrix. She's done filmmaking, she's done acting, she's done singing, and I'm just fascinated with her. The show's got all the ABBA hits, Dancing Queen, Take a Chance on Me. 7 o'clock today through Thursday, all next weekend. You need to get out of the house.
WaltonArtsCenter.org for more information.
You'll be happier. And there's a bunch of live music tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Blues Jam at 8 at the Bayou in Rogers.
Right.
Jeff Fox at J.J.'s Grill and Chill in Fayetteville.
Uh-huh.
Stevie Tombstone at J.J.'s Grill and Chill in Rogers. Jed Clampett's in town.
Good old Jed.
He'll be at the Pesto Cafe in Fayetteville. There's an acoustic jam at the Pig and Whistle in Fayetteville. And live jazz at Teatro Scarpino.
All right, so no excuse for being bored.
Nope, not a one.
Becca Beckett-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Last week on Car Talk, you missed a brilliant demonstration of first-rate diagnostic skill.
And he said that the belts are fine.
No, he's wrong.
Okay.
Well, he could be wrong, and he could be right. There you go.
There you go.
Tell him that. Tell him he could be wrong.
For more clear and concise car advice, join us this week for Car Talk.
Car Talk, Saturday morning at 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Last week, in the middle of the ice and snow, five young musicians from Bentonville, plus their orchestra instructor, a few Bentonville High School orchestra boosters, and some of the siblings of the musicians, comprised a slow but steady caravan down Interstate 540 from Bentonville to our studio. They arrived to perform a pair of numbers in the Furman Garner Performance Studio and to get the word out about a benefit concert for which the proceeds would be delivered to the Bentonville Orchestra. That concert has now been postponed because of the winter storm we expect this week. It will be rescheduled, but we still wanted you to meet and hear the talented quintet of Bentonville students we invited into the studio. Katie Johnson and Maria Falcon each play the violin.
I have been playing since the sixth grade, the first chance that you could play an instrument at school.
Yeah, we both started in the program when the orchestra program first started in Bentonville when we were in sixth grade. So,
what was the hardest thing about learning the instrument?
The hardest thing was that you just wanted to play it and you wanted to learn something. You wanted to learn a song, but you didn't get to hold your bow for like a month. So that was the most difficult thing. Like, we just wanted to play. Yeah. We thought learning an instrument was like, you just pick it up and then they just teach you how to play a song right away.
Yeah, but we had to learn all of the technique first, and that was frustrating because, like she said, we just wanted to play the new instrument that we've never really seen before, that we'd never gotten to hold, and we had to learn all the finger patterns and how to actually hold it properly first, and so that was the hard part.
Yeah.
What is the best part about the violin?
Just knowing that you have like a talent, and saying that you can do it is very rewarding. Something to fall back on, definitely. Mm-hmm.
In just a bit, we'll meet the other 3/5 of the quintet. But first, let's hear all of them play together. Their first selection was Jupiter from Holst. Jesse Collette, the student's instructor at Bentonville High School, says the piece is an appropriate one for a string quintet.
As I think a lot of people will agree, it's one of the most beautiful pieces written. And the string arrangement in particular just really really captures those beautiful harmonies that Holst presents in this piece. And I know that there are certain pieces of music that I really enjoyed and I'm connected with forever. And I hope to enlighten the students in that feeling as well.
Here are Katie Johnson and Maria Falcon, violins, Colby Williams, viola, Grant D'Aubin, double bass, and Ronald Usler, cello, under the direction of Jesse Collette, performing Holst, Jupiter.
Thank you.
That performance was recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio last week. Grant Diabin, Colby Williams, and Ronald Usler, viola, double bass, and cello respectively, talked about their passion for music during their visit.
Well, I started playing bass in the second grade. My family plays music, so I've been playing since the second grade. So.
And I started in fourth grade because I came from Illinois, and that's when they started orchestra. So.
Yeah, and I started in the sixth grade as well. So.
Why strings, not brass, not woodwinds, not percussion?
Because they're cooler, man. Straight up.
My dad plays a stringed instrument, so he plays mandolin and guitar, and so I've just kind of always wanted to play a string instrument. Like, playing in a concert is probably one of my favorite feelings in the world. Just everybody working together and creating this whole huge sound, and there's nothing like it, and you can't explain it to people, really.
Definitely.
But
what's it sound like in the middle of an orchestra?
It's amazing. I mean, like, being a viola, like, we're that group that nobody knows about, and it's right in the middle of everything. And it's like you got, like, the brass in the back right behind you. You have, like, the violins right on your right. And then we got the bass coming and the cello from our left, and we hear everything. It's awesome being right in the middle of it.
And as a bass, I get to watch everybody because I'm in the back, and so I get to watch everybody getting into it, and it makes me get into it, and it's fun.
Jesse Collette, the director of the Bentonville School Orchestra, teaches students in the district in junior and senior high school. He says before students are able to play like what we just heard, there is plenty of homework to do.
First, understand the language and understand music itself, and then try to apply it to an instrument, which isn't a challenge in itself.
What's the first thing you do? Say I walk in, sixth grader or 47-year-old man, and I say, I want to know how to play the violin. What's the first thing you do?
Well, you know, part of it is they have to be able to hear. So there's lots of exercises that we do to focus on hearing those interval patterns and hearing just basic modes of major and minor and being able to hear a major scale or being able to hear that major scale within a piece and how it's constructed. We really focus a lot on that in sound production and technique, how you hold the instrument. And the payoff is later. When you get to apply all those things all at the same time, that's when orchestra becomes really exciting, really fun for the students.
Now, the Bentonville Orchestra, tell me a little bit about when people can see or hear the orchestra.
Well, we have about 3 concerts a year. We're trying to expand that to 4. We have a holiday concert around Christmas. Then we have a contest concert where we practice the pieces that we play for contest. And we have a concert for that. And then we have a celebration at the end. It's called Pops on the Lawn. And it's usually at Old High. And we may move that to the square or to a nice place where everybody can be together and enjoy food and snacks and music.
The 5 young musicians' first piece they played for us was from Holst, a composer born in the 19th century. For their second piece, they picked something a little bit more recent, written by 2 men born in the 1940s, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. Again, Jesse Collette.
Cashmere by Led Zeppelin. They really enjoy performing this. It's one of those timeless pieces that, like you said, we all have experienced and enjoy.
And translates very well to this setting, very well.
Absolutely. You know, the original arrangement of this, I think, includes strings. And if you listen really closely, I think in the recordings that Page and Plant did, I think you'll hear some, at least the essence of strings in there.
Thank you. Ronald Usler cello, Grant Diabin double bass, Colby Williams viola, Maria Falcon violin, and Katie Johnson violin, students at Bentonville High School and members of the Bentonville Orchestra. They played under the direction of Jesse Collette. The benefit concert scheduled for later this week to help the orchestra has been postponed because of that impending winter storm. It will be rescheduled, and we'll tell you more about the orchestra boosters that support the young musicians in Bentonville when that rescheduled concert draws closer. The music we heard was recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF with our own wizard of recording, Tyrell Dennison, behind the controls. This is Ozarks at Large. Some final notes on February 8th now. The predicted snowfall has canceled the free performance of the Tulsa Opera in Bella Vista for Thursday night. The plan is to reschedule for August or September. And the Northwest Arkansas Chamber Singers and Jazz Band Valentine Dance for the 11th and 12th also canceled. To balance out those cancellations, a couple of additions to the schedule. The Trumpet and Friends concert on the University of Arkansas campus that was lost to snow and ice last week will now take place on the 15th at 7:30 in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall. And one of the funkiest saxophonists in history is being added to the spring calendar of Walton Arts Center. Maceo Parker will perform April 8th. Tickets go on sale Friday morning at 9 at Walton Arts Center and waltonartscenter.org. Maceo has a resume that includes playing with the funky trinity of James Brown, George Clinton, and Bootsy Collins. This update on a prediction made on this program last week. During the regular Monday Plug or Predict segment, I said I thought the Super Bowl would draw the largest TV crowd in history. It did. The NFL says nearly 163 million people, about half the country's population, turned into some portion of the game. The average viewership at any point of the game was 111 million people. And speaking of records, SWEPCO says last week a new all-time peak load for the company was experienced thanks to snow, ice, and record-breaking cold. Last Friday morning at 9, SWEPCO customers in three states, including Arkansas, used 4,627,000 kilowatts of energy. That edged out the previous record that had been set just 2 days earlier. A kilowatt, by the way, the electricity required to burn 10 100-watt light bulbs. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the Center for Arkansas Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. And the Block Street businesses, located between Dixon Street and the Fayetteville Town Square, offering a variety of shops, restaurants, and services. Merchants include Handheld Knitting, French Quarters, and Be Fit. More information is available on Facebook or at blockstreetbusinesses.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Kibler. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Have a great Tuesday.